Willkommen bei einer neuen Episode von Markenkraft. Für alle, die von Marken fasziniert und für ihr Wohlergehen verantwortlich sind. Welcome to another English episode of Markenkraft. My name is Olaf Hartmann and today I have the pleasure of speaking with Professor Mats Urde. Mats is a renowned researcher, educator and consultant in strategic brand management. He holds a PhD in branding and is an associate professor at the Lund University in Sweden. Recently, he was voted Coach of the Year in the International MBA John Molson Case competition in Montreal. He draws on decades of consulting experience for brands ranging from Bona, the maker of the famous Bona Wax, Trek Bikes, IKEA, Volkswagen, and even to the Nobel Prize Foundation. Mats' concept of brand orientation has gained significant traction in both academic and professional circles after a famous article on the topic in the Harvard Business Review. His work has been instrumental in shaping how organizations approach brand management and strategy today. And we will be discussing his new book, The Brand Matrix: Corporate Brand Leadership Starts from the Inside. This work expands his Harvard Business Review article and introduces the corporate brand identity matrix as a model for aligning an organization's identity core with every aspect of its business. We're in for an exciting discussion about the challenges and principles of successful brand implementation. Buckle up for an enlightening journey into the world of holistic brand implementation. Welcome, Mats. It's great to have you on the show.
Thank you, Olaf. I mean, with an introduction like that, I'm the one buckling up and I'm in for the challenge. Oh my God. I mean, I'm deeply, deeply honored. I love to, you know, be on this podcast. I think this is probably my first podcast ever. It might even be my last, but let's see how it works out, right?
I think you'll do fine. I think you'll do great. Yeah. So to warm up into that podcast, a quick fire round of questions.
Sure.
Beer or wine?
I mean, I think the Germans, they have a good rule. Was sagt man? Bier nach Wein rat ich dir und so weiter. I never remember the order, but what I do remember is that it's okay to drink beer and then wine, but you cannot do wine and then beer. Okay.
Yeah, the Germans say Wein auf Bier, das rate ich dir. Bier auf Wein, das lass sein.
That's genau, as one would say. No, I would say that honestly. Beer is what I prefer. And my youngest son, Axel, he says, Dad, I do beer because it's an honest drink.
That's great.
I like that.
Apple or PC?
Apple. And the reason, and I think the reason is that, you know, I really started when Apple came around. I mean, not the fruit, because the fruit has been around for quite some time, but the computer Apple. I started with it, and then I kind of got captured in their golden cage of Apple, right? But I love it. I mean, and of course, inspired by the 1984 movie when they introduced Apple. That was fantastic. So I like Apple.
Right.
Design.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, books or podcasts?
Both, I would say, for sure. I mean, you have seen my office, Olaf, and I mean, I have quite a few books. I have a beautiful bookcase out of Swedish oak, and I love books, and they are personal to me. I put those small yellow markers. I have my own notes in them. Some books, you know, becomes like good friends. But then again, podcasts, you know, hey, that's the new world. I love them.
Great. Brand or culture?
Do I need to change? Do I have to choose that one? I
think just both. Choose. No. Just it's a quick fire round. Just answer and we pick it up later.
Okay. Culture.
Brand culture.
Yeah.
Strategy or tactics?
Strategy.
Academia or industry?
Ooh. Bridging the two. Yeah.
And that's your job.
That's my job.
That's great.
Right.
That's your job. So what was the first money you ever earned? And what was your first real job?
The first money. It's really funny. My first real job, Olaf. I know. I mean, podcasts is what it is, right? And I sometimes think about it. I never actually had an honest job. It's true. And I mean, of course, I've been in organizations. I worked at Tetra Pak in Switzerland for a while. I'm employed at university, but I have always felt that I'm so passionate about what I do, I don't actually view it as work. Isn't that wonderful? Well, that,
yeah, you do what you love and you don't have a work.
No.
You have to work a day in your life.
That's right.
Isn't that the saying?
Isn't it the saying? Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you're very fortunate then. That's fantastic. And what was the very first job that you ever got money for or compensated for, like in your childhood? What was you grew up in Sweden? Is that it?
Yes, I did. But we have been moved around quite a lot. I mean, my family, we've been in Africa and Liberia. We actually have spent a half year in Düsseldorf when I was 7 years old. 7 years old in Düsseldorf. That was exciting. And I've been, you know, Switzerland, United States, France. Yeah, I've been moving around a bit and studying abroad. And I think that has shaped me a lot.
Right, right. And why that obviously was due to your parents, like
yes.
Your father's job.
Yes.
Like what was he doing? Like,
well, actually, my dad, he was working with U.S. Steel in Grängesberg. I mean, that was steel. And let's not forget my mother. She was a nurse, and she was actively working as well. And I think that's pretty cool, considering this was a long time ago.
Absolutely. Hmm. And looking back, like, do you remember the first moment that a brand actually influenced one of your decisions, where you actually chose one product over another, and the reason was the meaning of it, the brand that was behind it? Do you remember that moment?
Well, I mean, the first time, I don't know, but I think, I mean, I'm a passionate sailor, okay? So I love boats, especially sailboats. And I think actually there is this Halber Rassi sailboat. I know that a lot of Germans love that boat, as do I. But they came out with a new model. This was, I don't know, 15 years ago or something like that. It was a boat that I only saw on a drawing, right? And I ordered it without actually have seen the boat. Now, I think that says something about what you actually expect, how much you trust a brand.
That is a very good, that's a big investment. Lots of trust here. Without ever touching anything, you just saw it. And
I can reveal to you, Olaf, it's actually a pretty good investment because I sold the boat for the same price I bought it for. And then I bought another Halber Rassi, same size, yeah. Not a big one, but still.
The power of brand.
Exactly.
And there's a parallel to one of the great German brand thinkers. I don't know if you're aware of that, but Hans Domitzlaff, mm-hmm. he was an amazing sailor. He even developed his own class of sailboat. Yeah,
okay.
Like the Dirk and is many sailors know Hans Domitzlaff without having any clue that he is connected with branding or marketing or something. They just know him because he wrote many books about sailing.
Right.
That's really good. And sailing actually is a good metaphor for running a brand because it's a complex system that always is in interaction with the environment, with the forces there, and is trying to keep it on course.
Yes.
By doing things on board.
Absolutely.
And you need to coordinate many people. And you see this? This is a great entry into our topic.
Yeah, yeah. I think, Olaf, you're great when it comes to doing these metaphors. I love them. But I think if you take it from the strategic point of view, I mean, what we're doing is actually we are in our current position, right? Latitude, longitude. This is where we are, right? And then in our strategic thinking, we are then envisioning something which actually will, you know, build our future. And then we say, okay, this is where we will, this is our aspired position. And everything you need to do is actually positioning, right? And then, I mean, if you take the sailing metaphor, which I love, then, I mean, you have the wind, it carries you one way, you have the waves, you have the currents, and then bloody hell, there is another sailboat coming and screaming, starboard, you have to veer, and then you go the other way. And I think this is really a good metaphor for strategy, right? I mean, we are striving from our current position to our aspired position. And I think this is, and in the world of positioning and strategy, the brand is very important. And I'm sorry to say, quite often underestimated.
Yeah, yeah. And it's like a compass. I had another talk with Wolfgang Disch, who's also, he knows a lot about Domitzlaff, and he basically rediscovered his thinking. And he loves Antoine de Saint-Exupéry, and there's this great quote of Antoine de Saint-Exupéry, which I never actually read in English. Let's try this. Who doesn't know his destination port? Mm-hmm. For him, no wind will be helpful. No, but that's, all winds are terrible.
I think it's absolutely right. I mean, if we take another literature reference, it's a bit like Carol in Wonderland, right? And she comes up to the owl and she says, what road or what way should I take? And then the owl says very wisely, so where do you want to go? And she answers, well, I don't know. And then the owl says, well, in that case, you can take either road. Doesn't matter. And I think this is, I love this. And I think it, when we are looking at, you know, topics like marketing, branding, strategy, I mean, there are great books and there's a lot to read. But to actually have influx from culture and from other sides of life is super important.
Mm, that's great.
And the metaphor,
Yeah, now we basically set the philosophical and literary stage. And so now we get back to you. How did you become interested in brands and brand management? And where do you see the state of marketing and brand management today?
Well, I think first of all, did I plan to become a researcher and do what I'm doing? Maybe, maybe not. With a smile, I might say maybe I was predestined. I don't know. But I think it started out when I was a younger version of myself coming out of from university and business school. I started work as a management trainee in Switzerland for Tetra Pak. Okay. And life was good, very good. And then we had this letter from the headquarters in Lund, where the lawyer of Tetra Pak said, there is a big issue, and some of our brands and trademarks are now considered to be more like words, description of products. I mean, more like generic words. And this is a legal problem. And I was scratching my head, and I said, well, you know, what I recently read at university was like Windsurfer, that's a fantastic brand. Kleenex is great. You know, Masonite, you know, keep on going. And I was completely confused, right? And I said, mm-hmm. Okay, so the literature, the legal literature says this is the end. And marketing, some marketing guys said this is fantastic.
Just to clarify for the listeners, what we're talking about is that the brand becomes so strong that it's like synonymous with what it describes, the category.
Exactly.
Like the yo-yo, the Kleenex, in Germany, the Tempo.
Yeah, exactly.
And these kind of things. And that's a problem because then everybody can call themselves, we are a yo-yo.
Right,
yeah?
Right.
Yeah.
No, but you're right. And also, with the, you know, all of you said becomes so strong. And of course, I started to think, well, I mean, is our aim to become the name of the category, or is our aim with building a brand to do something distinctive, to be something that stands out? something that is a strategic asset, something that is legally protected, something we can invest in, something we own. But I mean, the whole thing is that when a brand, a registered trademark becomes a word of a common language, it is open for everybody to use. It's the end.
And then it's not strong anymore.
No, like I think, you just said. For me, it was like a wonderful thing to start to think of because it was a big clash, right? And then I dove into this. And of course, I was lucky because I was working in a case, right? A live case, Tetra Pak. They were doing this. And next door, we had, I mean, this was Switzerland. Next door, we had Nestle, and they had Nescafe. And then we have next door, DuPont, and they had like Teflon, Nylon, Kevlar. They were all experiencing this idea, this phenomenon that a brand is almost swallowed up by common language, right? And then I started to think, okay, what is a brand? And I really got so captured. I got so captured that I became a researcher, which completely surprised myself. But I sometimes say with a big smile, I was paid in Swiss francs, but then I had the same pay, but it was in Swedish krona, which actually was not a very good idea from an economic point of view, because the currency rate between the Swiss franc and the Swedish krona was 1 to 8. So I really did not do it for money. I was passionate about learning, and I actually found that I have a strong academic part of myself, but then at the same time, a passion for business, right?
And the starting point was really like a practical problem.
Absolutely.
That you experienced in an organization.
Absolutely.
And I think that's the best way, like research should be useful in the real world. So starting with something which only researchers are interested in, which in some parts we have to be fair, in marketing academia, I have the impression that many things are just happening to get the citations, to research something, to be quoted in other researchers,
right.
but it doesn't reach the desks of people that decide things on Monday morning, that are in trouble, that are under pressure, that need to have, that need orientation. So I think that was a very good starting point.
Yeah,
and you described in, when we talked first, that one of the key problems you identified on that journey was that brand is such an elusive concept.
And yeah,
there are many different definitions.
It is absolutely just that. I think that when I think about a brand, I think actually I prefer the simplest and shortest definition of what is a brand. And I would say, and I think there are quite a few of us that actually say the same thing. It's a brand is a promise. A brand is ultimately promise. And I think as human beings, we all understand that a person, a company, a product, an organization, institution, keeping its promise, we will start to like that. We will start to respect it. We will trust it. You know, we will recommend it. So we understand that keeping promises is a very good thing. Now, a promise is actually what you're telling people, this I will do, but it's also a promise by saying this I will not do, right? It's two-sided. And to continue, we also know as human beings that when a good friend breaks a promise, we are very disappointed. So I think if you're in a meeting, I mean, the people now listening to overhearing our conversation here, I think if they kind of think that, okay, we're talking about branding and there are many things to think about, but if we think about our brand as a promise, what should we do to keep that promise? I think then you're on the right track, actually. You're on the right track.
I love that definition because it's also immediately actionable in the sense that people understand a promise needs to be kept. And the next question comes, what do we need to do to keep this promise?
and not just the marketeers, they can't keep the promise. Yeah, so this is about product development, this is about service, this is about every touch point where the promise creates an expectation and then needs to be kept. And and without using the word brand, everybody in the organization suddenly understands what brand is about. It's creating expectations in people's heads. And like what you described with the boat, there's so much positive prejudice, there's so much trust that actions are influenced. Okay, and I love that. No, so but, that's
but,
very...
But I agree. And I think that the promise idea... So if you think about the brand as a promise, and then you say, okay, we are now going to reach a decision, small or big, right? Then you ask yourself, will this help the brand or will it hurt the brand? I mean, I think that's also a really good way to think and aid you in your decision making. But then, of course, we come back to what you touched upon, Olaf, and that is the brand word, right? And, you know, sometimes when I'm presenting to a board or, you know, a business to business organization where maybe the brand word is maybe not that frequent, or maybe it is viewed as something that the marketing people speak about, but is not really part of the discussion in the executive team, right? Sometimes I find myself to say reputation. Because reputation is the outcome of keeping your promise, building a brand, and the reputation and the image you actually create is actually what helps your company or organization to compete and be successful, right? So the brand word is actually at times a problem. And one reason why it is an issue is because quite a few of us think about brands and then up pops Coca-Cola, right? And that's a product brand, which is fine. But quite a few of the brands that I've been working with are actually corporate brands. Now, there's a difference here because Coca-Cola, we say Coca-Cola, it is a soft drink from Atlanta, right? And that is built mainly on advertising, right? And then if we say, let's say ABB, the big Swedish engineering company, you would say ABB, we are, or ABB, they are leading in automation, energy grids. Another, it and they. Now, already here, you can, just by listening, you can say that, hey, this is actually two kinds of brands. With big implications, Olaf.
What are the, exactly like? What are the implications there? That if you differentiate that, and if you look at the understanding of brand within the organization, there, where do you see the challenge of different perception of what a brand is? If for example, a board of that company thinks a brand is Coca-Cola. And that's the reason why it's not relevant for us, because we are ABB and we create engineering, and we are not a piece of glass with some fizzy water, brown fizzy water inside.
No, exactly. I mean, first of all, if you say product brands, of course, I'm painting this a bit black and white, Olaf, but I mean, to make my point here, if you say a product brand, Coca-Cola, I mean, advertising is number one. It's building an image of your product and, of course, logistics and all that. But that's one thing, right? And it's marketing, a lot of marketing. But then when you come to the we brand, the corporate brand, I mean, the we brand, then if you're doing business with a corporate brand, you will actually meet people from that organization. Sometimes you will work with that organization and those people for 10 years, 30 years, for a very long time. That it's all about relationships here. And the people in the organization is part of the brand's value proposition and positioning. Now, if you start to think about that, what's the implication for you as a leader or a communicator? Well, the organization standing behind the brand is actually essential, right?
First of all, just because it's so precious, I want to repeat that. So we have a very clear filter here. So I brand and we brand. Yeah. That's really good. And the we brand, basically, the fizzy water, the brown fizzy water in the glass bottle in the we brand is the behavior of the people. The strongest touch points is not what you feel in your mouth, the taste, but it's similar. It's like the contact point, the touch point of the brand is the people you meet, the kind of processes, the consulting processes that you create. And then obviously somewhere there's also where the rubber meets the road. There might be some physical components in the end, but before, like, the processes are so much longer before you actually can experience the gas pipeline, the whatever new production plant and so on, and the kind of trust you need to build into the process before you make the purchase decision starts much, much earlier, involves more people and so on. So that needs, that creates the need for alignment, because if the, like, Coca-Cola controls the fizzy water 100%. Mm. It should taste every single time. It should taste the same. And here, now we get to the point why it's so important to align the organization. If you have one engineer behaving in one way and the other engineer behaving in a completely other way, they might violate the brand perception of what people in the end buy. Did I understand you correctly?
100%. And you even express it better than I did, so congratulations.
That's great. Yeah. We said this podcast must be that we talk to each other and say things which we didn't know before.
No, that's right.
The goal of this podcast.
I mean, that's the whole point with a good discussion and a good conversation. But I remember when I spoke with a CEO of Assa Abloy, dating back now many years, and he said, you know, Mats, we spend about 80% of our management time to build our own organization and build our own culture. Because in the end, it's our organization that has to live up and deliver on our promise. You know, that's, I think, and then, you know, if you then compared, what is Coca-Cola doing? I mean, with all due respect for the Coca-Cola, I mean, you understand what I'm saying here. I mean, they spend 80% of their time on advertising. So I think if you start to think about your role as a manager or a leader or even a person part of an organization, if you're in a we brand, you will need to understand that you have to know, who are we? What do we stand for? What's our promise? How do we deliver on that promise, right? So you see, it all comes back to the promise.
But I think there's a great connection there. Because in the end, the effect of the brand in both cases happens in the brains of the people. And that was the kickoff of neuromarketing, when they found out that Coca-Cola, like in a blind test, activated certain regions in the brain. And then suddenly they knew that it was Coca-Cola, and then other regions in the brain lit up. And then they thought they could find the buy button, but that's not the That wasn't the case, but it definitely created a different, completely different activation in the brains. And there's the connection between the I and the we brand. Just the way these connections are built is completely different. The one thing needs to strengthen by what you say, that advertising, the communication, always a certain perception of what you're drinking there. You're drinking friendship, you're drinking Christmas, you're drinking refreshment, you're drinking good taste, da, 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 da. And with the we brand, it's the same goal, creating a certain expectation, perception. Just the way you get into those brains is completely different. You go to conferences, you have a consulting meeting with the people, you have reference cases. But there's the connection, but the management process, obviously, the one needs to focus a lot on communication. Yeah. And the other one needs to focus on many more things. So it's actually more difficult to do.
Yeah, and this, of course, I mean, this really shows that if you actually adopt the idea that the organization matters and the organization is part of your brand, then I think the conclusion must be that we have to understand our brand. We have to understand what we promise, We have to understand what engages us and what's our aspired position. I mean, if you think about it, to know your purpose, to know what you promise, and to know what your aspired strategy, your aspired position is, those three things are very nicely connected, right?
Right. So, and to bring it back to your consulting practices, yeah. when was that realization? What was the observation you made that made you realize there needs to be a tool that helps us doing this, because it doesn't happen very well?
Oh my God! Yeah, I love that question, and I crack up every time I think about it. I mean, first of all, it goes way, way back in time. So I was still writing my PhD, right, thesis, and then we got this phone call from a company doing Nicorette, you know, the smoke cessation product, you're chewing gum that helps you quit smoking, right? And the CEO, he said, well, you know, I heard that you're doing a PhD on branding, and I think that's interesting. Would you like to come to a meeting? I think we have an issue right here. And then he started to tell the story that they have been, you know, prescription medicine has been doing well for many, many years, and now the patent is about to expire, and now they're going to start to, you know, compete. All right, great. And then I said, okay, so we're going to launch an international brand, and guess what? I was part of it, you know, as a young green researcher, I was part of launching the brand, and we did everything by the book, Olaf. I mean, we asked, dear customers, how can we satisfy your needs and wants? I mean, that's straight out of Kotler. It's straight out of marketing management. It is from the outside in, and we designed a brand, and we communicated, and the audience just loved it, and sales were soaring. We were making money like crazy. And then, bloody hell, something happened.
What happened?
Well, I was walking around in the organization, and I started to hear people, and I'm shivering when I'm telling the story. I still remember it so vividly. And people were saying, what have you done with our brand?
So they were not happy. You were super successful. Sales were great.
We don't recognize ourselves anymore. I mean, the commercials, they're degrading. Why do you communicate things? Why do you put out benefits coming out from the blue thin air? Why don't you speak about the function of the product? And they said, and one guy, he said, I mean, this was the head of research, Olaf, coming into a meeting. And he said, well, I would like to declare my opinion on what you call this branding and marketing project. I find it to be degrading and manipulation of consumers. I am leaving the company today. And he walked out.
Okay.
Okay, Olaf. And then I was, you know, I had some sort of, I don't know what I had, but it was a bit like, this was not what I intended to do with my life and my research, okay? I did not want to crash a fine organization and make people completely disillusioned. I didn't want to create a we-them management organization discord. But this is exactly what had happened.
And what was the reason?
Exactly. And that's why this actually changed my dissertation, my writing, my thinking, everything. Because I started to backtrack, you know, like a proper researcher. And I said, okay, now I'm returning to organization. I'm no longer a consultant. By the way, this was my first consultancy project, okay? Number one, a long time ago. And I started to backtrack. And I started to draw a picture in my notebook. And I said, okay, so what do we hear? When I spoke with one researcher, he said, Mats, now listen, this is a wonderful organization and people are not happy anymore. And I mean, this, we are in a crusade against smoking. We are in a battle against tobacco. And then I said to myself, I hadn't heard that expression before. I missed something. And what is it? What do you mean, ethical battle, a crusade against smoking? What is this all about? And I started to think. But it was obviously very important. And after a while, I understood this was actually the purpose of the organization. This was the driving force of people in that organization. I mean, medical researchers, of course. They wanted to save people's lives. That's what they signed up for. And what they now saw was a Coca-Cola advertising for their product.
Okay, so what you're describing is basically the self-image these people had, which led this organization to be successful, like the right research, like really rigorous scientific studies, where suddenly the values clashed with what they saw, how that product was marketed outside. And because that alignment wasn't there anymore, the identification of the head of research became so low that he said, this is not my company anymore. This is not my team anymore.
Olaf, think about it. Mm. And you know, I had learned in school and university, satisfy the needs and wants of the consumer. But that is how you build a product brand.
Mm-hmm.
But we were an organizational brand.
And we had forgotten
to ask ourselves, what do we stand for? What's our purpose? What do we know better than others? How do we work and behave?
Mm-hmm. And now you could say, but this was positive. It was commercially successful, but only in the short run with one product. And then if you lose all your researchers and what created this amazing product, you basically take the heart out of the brand because these people will not continue to work on the level that they did to bring the company to where they are. So you can continue to market Nicorette and be successful with that, but it takes out the beating heart of the organization.
Yes.
Okay.
You take out the beating heart of the organization, and we had confused, we had used all the tools and all the techniques and all the advertising and communication to build a product brand, but it was actually an organizational brand. And this is what I did, and my contribution in my PhD thesis was actually to say that, all right, so when you're building a brand, especially an organizational brand, you have to look, you know, from the outside in. How do we satisfy the needs of one sort of consumer? Obviously. Otherwise, you won't have a market. Come on. But then you have to have a second perspective, the inside out brand orientation. And that is all about identity. So what do we stand for? What's our values? What do we know better than others? And so on. And by combining the two, you actually can build a brand.
And that was the pivotal moment, basically, that led to which is now the brand metrics.
Absolutely.
So I think I think my listeners are on the edge of their seats now. I think we dive into the basic problem that the brand metric solves, just from my perspective, is what we discussed before. There are always different perceptions of brands within the organization. Let's start with that real quick, with that nice metaphor that you use in the book, by the way. Mm-hmm. Talk about the tool that how does the brand metrics help non-marketing professionals to actually understand and harness the power of branding for the whole organization?
Yeah. I mean, Olaf, if I may, I think I would like to backtrack just a bit, okay?
Okay.
Just a bit.
You can even deviate.
No, I'm not. I'm trying to help the guys who are listening to us now to kind of paint a picture in their mind, even though they might be driving on the autobahn. So be careful, guys. But I think if you draw a circle and you say, put there in the middle, you say the promise, right? Or the core, okay? And then you kind of add a top layer and you put customers, stakeholders on top, okay? So now that I think could be said, it's a bit like a product brand. You have a core, you have a promise, and then you communicate with your customers and stakeholders, all right? And then how do you build that brand? Well, you draw an arrow from the outside in, kind of circling that. How do you satisfy the needs and wants? Okay, now this is how you build a product brand, very simplified, of course. But what I did was actually to add the lower part, the foundation. So I drew a circle down below, so it becomes more like an egg with an outside, an inside, and a core. So I call it, you know, guess what? The egg model. So, and then you have one arrow going from the outside in and one from the inside out. Now, if you think about that framework, and that is actually what I published in my PhD thesis a long time ago. But what happened many years later was that I actually drew two vertical lines through that egg-shaped framework. And guess what? Out comes the 3x3 matrix. Sorry for the discretion.
Like a 3x3 matrix looking like the Rubik's Cube.
Exactly.
From one
yeah.
side.
Well, you can say
so
that.
So people have it in their head. So yesterday, Mats, we discussed, like, for our listeners on the Autobahn, that you cannot show your wonderful board behind you. So the Rubik's Cube, that's something that we found mm-hmm. that everybody has in their head. So now we have this one side of the Rubik's Cube, then 3x3 matrix. And what does it describe?
Well, I mean, first of all, what's straight there in the middle of the Rubik's Cube is the promise or the identity core. I mean, that's what it is. And what it actually describes is, with the help of 9 questions, this is a toolbox that helps you to define, redefine, or align what you actually stand for as a corporate brand. That's the tool, and this is what it does.
Hmm. And how do you start? Like, basically, you need a core. What are the different? Maybe we just go through the different questions
I can run through the questions. I mean, I already started by saying that. Okay, I mean, you have the from the inside. There were things where we spoke about when we build the Nicorette brand. We spoke about the value proposition, the customer relation, the aspired position. Obviously, we spoke about the expression. We spoke about the personality of the brand. We spoke about what the brand promised. Okay, I mean, those are all good things when you're building a product brand. And those are all part of the matrix as well. However, when you're building a corporate brand, you need to include, so what's our purpose? What about our culture? And what about things that we know better than others, namely our competences. And what I just said is kind of completes the picture.
And this translates the egg model. Basically, that's the lower part of the egg that you just described.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, okay. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, if you think about it, you can say, if you're going to, when I've been sitting into, I don't know how many meetings and listening to people speaking about, what do we stand for? I mean, at conference and so on. And what has actually frustrated me incredibly is that they speak about one part of the brand, or maybe two. But, I mean, they lack the big picture. I don't know, Olaf, have you heard a story about the three blind men trying to describe an elephant?
Yeah, Chinese. It rings a bell.
Okay, maybe Chinese.
Help me again.
Blind.
Yeah,
they
whatever.
Blind.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the whole point of the story is that three blind guys, and one guy, he's kind of feeling on the trunk of the elephant. He's this is probably a branch of something like that. And then the other guy is kind of feeling the tail. He's this is a broom or maybe a rope. And then another guy, he kind of stumbles into the leg of the elephant and he kind of clutches around the leg and he says, ah, this is a tree. Okay. It's kind of a funny story, but when I think about it and when I listen to how people speak about their brand in organizations, I mean, you can hear people say that, well, the brand is all about the purpose, right? And they be right, of course. Some might say, well, and this is quite often, you heard this a million and two times, but well, the brand is a logotype. It's a logotype. And that's correct, I guess. Yeah. Other people would say, the HR people say, it's all about culture, you know, how we work and behave. And then you might hear the strategy guys saying, well, it's about competitive advantages. What do we know better than others? And they will be right too. And you might listen to a salesperson say, well, come on. I mean, the brand is all about the value we bring. It's not our offering, okay? Or maybe a business-to-business person might say, it's all about the customer relations. Now, Olaf, it's all correct. It's all good.
They're all right.
I mean, they're all good. But the problem is, it's not connected. And we do not see the full picture. Now,
that's really nice. And it fits nice into the metaphor of the Rubik's Cube.
Yes.
It's like a Rubik's Cube that is basically completely messed up. Yeah. And what we're looking for is an alignment, like one side should have the same color. But if we only look at that one side, without taking the Rubik's Cube, turning it around, looking from this perspective, from that perspective, from that perspective, identifying the pieces that need to move into the picture, into your matrix, then we have no chance of solving the Rubik's Cube.
No, you're right. And I mean, I can start a meeting like saying, okay, so here are 9 questions. And just tell me something that you find to be very true about your brand. Something that is very authentically true, proven, and everything. All right? And then, I mean, Volvo, they might say that, okay, safety is very important to us. Okay? And some might say, okay, Volvo for life. I mean, that's a slogan or expression they use for a long time. Okay? Okay, maybe we put Volvo for life straight there in the middle, right? And then somebody says, well, so what's the position we would like to have? Well, we would like to be perceived to be the spokesman of safety. Okay, that's maybe a good thing to add to the aspired position. And then culture, how do we work and behave? Well, our engineers start to think about safety aspects very early on. Okay, then maybe that could be then in culture. You see, bit by bit, they are coming in good comments and answers to the 9 questions. Now, this is how you actually work with this toolbox that can help you to, you know, to define, refine, and align your brand.
Yeah. We don't want to, you know, everybody, I can only strongly advise everybody should buy this book because it explains it in detail. But just to make it tangible, like with Nicorette, how did you manage basically to identify the core that then aligned again, that maybe like, okay, the head of research left, but did you manage to repair basically the corporate brand?
Hey, wonderful that you remind me, and you know, because what happened later on, I sometimes forget to tell that story. I mean, that's what we're all waiting for. I mean, what happened was that the CEO, Jürgen Jonsson, he went up to the organization. He tried to say, well, we're earning a lot of money, and now we're going to fund a lot of your research projects. And people were, of course, saying, well, okay, that's good. But they were not entirely happy. And then he tried different things, but then he did something that actually worked. He stood up and said, now listen, our purpose is to be on a crusade against tobacco. And this has been our purpose already from the start. And this is how we're going to continue to work. Now, the advertising is what it is. It is working fine in the marketplace, so we won't change that. But remember that we still have our purpose, and by doing this communication, we fulfill our purpose even better. Now, you see the point, and now what happened was that the inside was now reconnected with the outside. And right there, smack in the middle, you had the promise, you know, enjoy a better life without cigarettes.
That's a great example. So basically, he didn't change what was working out there as an expression of the company because it was commercially successful, but it reframed it for the organization. This is just a tool that helps us. And you might not like our advertising, but that's okay. But in the end, it makes more people aware of what we have to offer and helps more people to quit smoking. So it actually serves our purpose. And that reframing basically was healing the wound. There is something strange happening that has nothing to do with me as a serious researcher.
Right.
And it actually generates revenue where I can stay in my, not my comfort zone, my passion zone.
Right.
I want to do more and even better research to help people quit smoking.
Thank you for telling that story. What happened, but there were other things that I heard from Nicorette, and I heard it from many other companies that have been working with the brand matrix. And that is one comment that I really enjoyed was from a Danish medical company, and it was with an HR person. And when we talked about the brand, and there was actually culture as part of the framework, you know, how do we work? How do we behave? And what attitudes do we have? I mean, that's the question. And she said, you know, finally, I can see my and HR's role in brand building. And I've heard comments, similar comments from the strategy guys. And I said, okay, now I can see that, you know, building core competences, you know, our abilities, bundling our resources, I can now see how that connects with what we promise and what we actually offer. And I mean, that connection, I mean, that's a wonderful understanding. And it's based upon that you're no longer a blind man describing an elephant. You can actually see the full picture without necessarily being a branding expert. You are just a manager understanding that you have a brand that actually helps you in your competition.
And that is so powerful because with our metaphor that we found, it basically helps also people to discover brand gaps where some of these fields are not serving the core. So basically don't have the right color. Then you look at the cube, look on the others. Ah, here, look, the red square that we need is on the other side.
Right.
And align the organization and say, we need to invest and our resources and our energy into getting that red square from the opposite side onto our side.
Yeah.
Yeah. To fulfill here our brand matrix. And everybody understands why. And that is also one of the problems of definition. What is success in an organization? It's like that comes back to the beginning of our discussion. If there's not a clear goal, success is relative. You go in an organization and you ask, okay, so the head of production,
right?
What is success for you? Mm-hmm. He says, I need the biggest machine available that runs 24 hours because that's the lowest cost per piece and I have a very good control of the quality.
Yeah.
And then you ask the head of sales and says, what is success for you? Well, success for me is to make really difficult things possible for my clients, to be very flexible. Mm. Like whatever they come to me, I will be the solution provider. Mm. And they both have a, like you said, with the blind man touching the elephant, they both have aspects of success correctly identified. But if they don't bring them together, this head of sales goes to the production guy and says, I need you to change the machine. And said, no, sorry, our machines are built like this and we cannot do it. And the opposite way is like the production guy says, hey, I can supply you 2 million pieces at perfect quality for this. And the head of sales says, yeah, but that's not what the company needs.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, it's a bit like a puzzle. And I think you mentioned a bit about the Nobel Prize, which you kind of, I mean, this is a project. I was not paid for it. I did it completely pro bono. Come on. The Nobel Prize, we can have different views on it or so on, but nevertheless, it is considered to be the most prestigious award in the world. It has been around for more than 100 years. So, okay. But still, it's an organization that struggles with relevance. You know, why do we need it? Why is it relevant? It's prestigious, yes, but why is it relevant? So they were struggling, and they have had their ups and downs as well, as we all know. But the thing is that there are like four institutions, different institutions awarding the Nobel Prize, you know, medicine, physics, literature, and so forth, right? And they're all different. The problem for the foundation was to say, what actually keeps these four organizations together? So we brought in my colleague, Professor Gracier from Harvard Business School, we brought in the brand matrix and we started to speak with people. And I think the main result coming out from that work was actually that we helped to define the core identity, the promise. And that is for the benefit of humankind. That's the promise. And that's actually the words from Alfred Nobel himself. So we did not invent anything. We just said, okay, there is one thing that keeps all you guys glued together and you have a common purpose, and that is to fulfill this promise for the benefit of humankind. And that's one way to show how you can actually piece things together with the help of matrix.
And when I listen to you now, I learned just two things. First of all, it's finding the core.
Yeah.
It's not inserting the core. And the second question I have, but which you answered in a way, is if my listeners understood, okay, yeah, that's really great. That's basically the transmission for everything.
Yeah.
But I don't have it.
Right?
Can I start with the brand metrics without having the core?
Yeah, I think the way, if you think about the matrix, like, you know, 3x3 grid, and there are 9 questions. And what we spoke about earlier, you and I, Olaf, was that I typically start by saying just try to answer the questions where you find an answer that really you feel good about. Right. So it doesn't matter really where you start. If you're lucky, of course, you have a good promise, but that is not necessarily the case. Right. Now, if you manage to explain, for instance, how do we work and behave? What's our attitude? And you have a really good answer for culture. Okay. Or maybe you can then answer, let's say, what do we offer? What are our key benefits? Okay, value proposition. And maybe you can say that, okay, this we do better than others. These are our core competencies. Okay, now you filled in three. You have 3 good answers out of 9, okay? But bit by bit, you can then draw the conclusion based upon those answers, what might be in the middle. It's a bit like, you know, induction and deduction. So you can actually circle around, and after a while, what should be the promise actually comes out as a part of your discussion. It's a wonderful thing to see happen.
That makes complete sense. And what you described also, this finding things that are true are often connected with, for example, the founder. And the organization often aligned just by watching the founder because he carried the core.
Yes.
So there was a lot of emulation going on. The culture was, you know, just look what he's doing. Look how he's behaving. Look how he's deciding. Mm-hmm. And then there comes a crisis the moment that founder or even, you know, second generation or the founding family or something becomes, that force becomes weaker because maybe they also lost their way. Maybe the fourth generation just doesn't understand as well as the first generation or second generation what the core of this company is about. And then the brand matrix would be a very good tool to identify something which had been implicit in the behavior and decisions of the founder and CEO or very influential CEO, and make it explicit and preserve it in that way. So first you discover it, and then you make it you make it transportable, yes, basically between generations.
What you're talking about makes me think about one of the chapters and the cases in my book, and that's IKEA. I mean, they had a very strong founder, Ingvar Kamprad himself. And what he said a long, long time ago was, you know, our purpose is to create a better everyday life for the many people. To create a better everyday life for the many people. I think it's a beautiful statement, really. And and then they have a business model that is based upon producing things that are, you know, functional, great form, shape, quality, low price, of course. I mean, this has been their idea for a long time, but then the world around us changes. Sustainability comes in like a big, important topic. And they have to rethink. And this is what I'm describing in this IKEA case. And I applied the matrix by saying, well, there are things that should remain stable, but there are also things that you need to adjust. And in the case of IKEA, I mean, the leadership of IKEA said, okay, we have to change and we have to get sustainability into the picture. But the main reason to go to IKEA is not to be sustainable, but it needs to be a sustainable business and sustainable product for sure, right? So this was actually a survival question for the entire organization and company. And what they did was actually to add one more criteria when they were designing new products. So every new product needs to be, yes, functional, good form, yes, quality, yes, low price, yes, but also sustainable. So they added one more criterion for their products. Now, if you look at the matrix or the identity of IKEA, there are some what I will call nudging, you know, like small adjustments that put together actually changes the course of our sailing ship, right? It's like 1, 2, 3 degrees change of course that in the long run will actually make them reach their new aspired position. So I think as an analytical tool, the matrix can be very helpful when you're actually trying to adapt to a changing environment. Because, I mean, come on. The only thing that is a true constant is change.
And that brings us, to the sailing. There's again also constant change again. Yeah. And to sum up, to come basically to a conclusion, and I repeat, buy the book, because one of the powerful things of this model is what you also advise and you walk your talk, use simple words. If that matrix is not filled with simple words that normal people understand,
right,
it will not become a useful tool in the organization. If we start to talk brand talk and marketing lingo,
exactly, yeah,
that only us insiders,
right,
understand.
Right.
Then you talk to somebody from production, you talk to somebody from HR, and they're just going to say, "Yeah, this is not my world." So have very simple words, simple descriptions that make complete sense, like the example that you just gave from IKEA, and then the use. We can't go into that, but I think we should touch the topic. That you can basically use the framework to answer problems, and that would be my wish if you share your experience with Volkswagen, because they had huge problems when you started to advise them, and you used the brand metrics basically to identify where is the problem, because all the dimensions of the brand metrics, if you read them from top to bottom, across, there's like a cross, it answers questions like, where's our problem? Is our problem recognizability, trustworthiness, credibility, reliability? So all the dimensions of what the brand sends as signals, yeah, and delivers as value is within the metrics, it can be answered. And you had in the book a very good example of the Volkswagen case, how to approach the situation that they had.
Right. I mean, you know, when we started, I said the brand is a promise, okay? And I said that when a good friend breaks his or her promise, you're very disappointed. Now, it happens to be that my first car was a Volkswagen Beetle, and I always loved, you know, Volkswagen. It's a friendly car. It's a great car, and it's good German quality. Now, when we all got to know about Dieselgate, it's a very sad story. I was very sad, actually, and disappointed. And I was working with Volkswagen in Sweden and very close contact with them. And we looked at it, and they were also disappointed. I mean, the people in the organization, they were devastated. They were so sad. And there are many things that happened in that story that really is worth thinking about, because media was killing them, right? But what was a bit unexpected was the support they got from loyal customers. I mean, on social media, there was a lot of people, you know, loving their Volkswagen, coming up and trying to protect their favorite brand. That's one thing that I would like to say about the story, but if you look at it, I said that IKEA, they were nudging their identity matrix to adapt to a new world, right? But in the case of Volkswagen, it was much more dramatic. They had to take, you know, a hard look in the mirror, asking themselves, who are we? What do we stand for? And how do we need to change? And that is described, you know, in their new version of their identity matrix. But Olaf, you were talking about the outcome of communicating and the reputation of Volkswagen. And in the Dieselgate, what was hurt in the beginning, the obvious, you know, hardship, was the reputation was harmed. Now, if you think about it, and this is, if you look at the matrix and how it works, it's kind of like an outer layer outside the 3x3 matrix, where we actually have the concepts of reputation, such as recognizability, trustworthiness, credibility, responsibility, you know, all the things we measure in market research, right? The outcome, the result of our brand building efforts. And these were the things that was seriously hurt by the crisis. For instance, trustworthiness went down. It dropped. Credibility dropped. Responsibility dropped, but recognizability went up, but for all the wrong reasons. So you can actually use the framework to analyze the situation. Again, coming back to sailing, you're out sailing and you hit a rock. And the captain says, okay, report damages, report damages. And, you know, where are the leaks? Where are the things we have to plug first? How do we actually communicate? How do we do this? How do we save the ship from sinking, right? So I think that was an amazing story. And looking at what happened, it took 5 years for Volkswagen Sweden to come back to its reputation. Took 5 years and a lot of hard work, and they have done a fantastic job.
Yeah, and they managed to do it. And it is a good example of putting the wrong thing in the core, like the headquarters in Germany. Mm. They put into the core, we will become the biggest car manufacturer, not the best. We wanted to become the biggest. So it was all about power and dominance and so on. And it's not about quality. It's not about satisfying customer needs. We want to be the biggest. And that's a very weak core in the long run.
Yes.
Because it creates certain decisions that we observe there. It's great, and the case study is much more complex and described in there, but I wanted to mention it. So we have two usages that we defined. The one thing is brand growth. How do we make our brand that is strong already even stronger?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
How do we actually start, even like even for startup brands? It's a very, those nine questions, uh-huh. they lead to alignment from the beginning on. So for startup brands, it's a very useful matrix to do. Mm-hmm. And the last thing is, if you're in crisis, it's like in the metaphor, it helps you to assess the damage.
Yeah.
Like, where is the damage, and what do we need to do to align again?
Yeah.
To repair the damage as quickly as possible. I think that is what else can you want from a tool? And what this does, it also lets the brand leave the marketing sphere. It basically makes the brand into a management tool.
But that's right, Olaf, and you're right. I mean, when I was writing the book, there was always, you know, there is always a final chapter, right? And I was thinking about what should be the final chapter. But I think I went exactly the way you're now talking, because actually this is about managing a business. It's about managing a business. Okay, the focus is on the brand. That is true. But a brand is, for many organizations, crucial. And I think about the competition we are facing. Products are becoming more the same. Price is going down in many businesses. So where do we actually find our competitive edge? What makes us different, stand out? Why should one customer go for us and not for the other guy? I think this is such a big question. And I think for us, you know, in Sweden, Germany, and many other countries, I think we really need to take care of the fact that the fact that there is an organization standing behind, and there are some ideas, values, purposes, ways of working, competences that makes us stand out. Because in the long run, we will never be able to compete on price. And it's a harsh message, but that's what I see, right? I think that's why, corporate brand leadership starts from the inside.
Right. That's very good. And what you always say, like what stuck in my head, is also bring the brand in the room.
Yeah.
In the organization.
Yeah.
And that helps solve many, many problems.
But that's right. And that was when I was writing my final chapter, I said, now I'm going to try to write this for a manager or a leader in an organization to say, okay, what do you need to think about? And one message, of course, is, keep the promise, obviously, and ask the questions, what helps and what hurts? Those are super important things that we should have, like, always in our minds. But if you think about leadership principles. I think the most important one is actually to bring the brand into the room. And again, yeah, this was something that one of my good friends from IKEA has been there for, I don't know how long, but working with Ingvar Kamprad himself and so on. But he said, you know, Mats, after many years of working in IKEA, I've come to the conclusion that when we reach bad decisions at IKEA, the brand was not in the room. And I think what does it mean to have to bring the brand into the room? Well, I think if you have a broader understanding of what the brand is and how things connect, then you can actually have the brand on the agenda all the time in small decisions and in big decisions. And you keep on asking, will this hurt the brand or will it help the brand? Do we keep the promise or do we not? I think, so bring the brand into room, I think that would be the screensaver.
That's very good. That brings us to one expression of the core of this very small brand called Markenkraft Podcast and our value that we deliver. And the value that we want to deliver is that something sticks in people's heads.
Right.
So they make a decision better on Monday morning. So the question is, like, if you have the chance to put all the chief brand marketing officers around the world for a year, something on their screensaver, what would it say?
Well, I think actually we already said it, but it's worth repeating, and that is bring the brand into the room. Simple as that.
Fantastic. That's a perfect finish. Bring the brand in the room. Thank you very much. Mats, this was an exciting hour with you. I think a little more than an hour. And I feel deeply grateful for your time and your valuable insights and the care you took in explaining the model. It doesn't replace the book, I honestly have to say, but I think that my listeners have taken a lot of value from hearing you talk. Thank you very much. And I just want to wish you lots of success on your quest, because I feel that it's something like a quest that you have to inspire business leaders to use the brand really as a compass on sailing the sea out there and bringing their boat up to speed and to the right destination. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Olaf. Thank you.
Und das war eine weitere Episode von Markenkraft. Vielen Dank, dass Sie dabei waren. Wir hoffen, es hat Ihnen genauso viel Freude gemacht wie uns. Wenn ja, empfehlen Sie uns, Ihren Freunden, Ihren Bekannten, Ihren Kollegen und bewerten Sie uns auf iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, SoundCloud, egal wo Sie diesen Podcast hören. Share the love for brands. Machen Sie es gut für sich und die Menschen in Ihrem Leben.